Because this is Bruce Pritchard from Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard. And you're listening to Mike Sapho, and I don't know why I'm here.
I saw you yesterday on Twitter in Times Square. Don't tell me you're one of those Texans, Southern guys that just comes and hangs out in Times Square, are you?
No, I had my daughter and my wife with me, and she had never been to Times Square, so.
Where else did you?
Yeah, you want to see some shit? Here. Then she's ready to go home.
After what? 5 minutes?
Yeah, too many people.
Did someone find you? Because I know on Twitter you said if they find you yesterday, they get free tickets to your show at Gramercy. Did they find you?
A couple did, but they already had tickets.
Okay.
So I got out of that one.
Okay.
And and then about three or four came up to me yesterday.
Okay.
I said, it's no good anymore. They go, no, it's okay. We got tickets. So I lucked out on all counts.
So besides coming to New York, crossing the street, that long, long walk to come on the Mike Sapho.
Not only that, I had to backtrack.
Wait, why? Why? Oh, you had to go to the corner.
Because I had to go to the corner.
You don't want to get ran over.
Well, yeah, you people don't allow jaywalking here.
We're very anti-jaywalking here.
Damn. I mean, seriously, I almost broke a sweat.
Well, intern Will is getting you a Diet Coke, so you're good.
Okay, I'm good.
So besides the Mike Sapho podcast, what brings you to New York City?
Well, God, we've got our live show Saturday at Gramercy.
I'll be there.
Really? Did you buy your ticket?
Of course I did.
I like that.
Yeah, of course.
Good, because I was going to say, I know where to get them.
If you find Bruce Pritchard walking around Manhattan, he has tickets on him.
Nah, not anymore. Now you can go to brucepritchard.com and just get them. So that's the beautiful thing about it.
Is it crazy that your podcast blew up to this level? Like, you had no idea it was even going to come close to this level, did you?
No, not at all. It was, I didn't even know what a podcast was when we started this thing. It was just, huh? And then we started. They said, if you get 10,000, you might make some money, man. You'll be able to pay a couple bills. Our first show did 61,000. Then, you know, we hit like over 350,000, started averaging out there, and then it grew from there. And no one expected it, especially us. We didn't know how to react to it.
I'll tell you how I got into it. I was watching. So I've been out in wrestling now for a while. Like so many people, I was the biggest diehard fan back in the day. I got out of it maybe the last 10 years. But it's the Raw 25th anniversary. Right. I got to watch it. So every time an old wrestler would come on, I'm like, oh, shit, what's so-and-so up to? So there's Brother Love. I'm like, oh, what's Brother Love up to? Oh, Brother Love has a podcast, like everyone else. I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. I put it on, Bruce Pritchard, Something to Wrestle. And I'm looking, and I'm like, whoa, these shows are 2 hours and 14 minutes, 2 hours and 50 minutes. I'm like, I'm not investing in this, because I thought it was just Brother Love doing his shtick show. So, and I was going on vacation the next morning. True story. I download the Mega Powers episode.
Right.
It was only an hour and a half, and obviously Hogan, Macho Man, this is going to be awesome. I'm like, all right, on the plane, I have a 9-hour flight. I'm listening. 15 minutes into it, I'm like, son of a bitch, I wish I could have downloaded 50 of these. Because the show, it gives you behind the scene. Not that you need to sell it, but can you just tell everyone what the show's about? If the three people who don't know what it is?
Well, when we first started, it was, what is the format? I had watched, you know, Ric Flair and other people kind of lament over finding guests, and you've got to find and wrangle and get the guests on the air and hope that they're going to be there when it's time to go and call them and find them. I said, I don't want to do that. I said, I don't want to do a guest story in a show. So we were told, your ratings and everything is going to depend on your guests and who you have. Don't go over an hour. Don't curse. So, as you can tell listening to our show, we don't do guests. We go a little bit longer than an hour, and we cuss like sailors. So we broke all the rules in the podcast world. We did everything they told us not to do, and it became successful. But the idea behind it was to just be different, and that's what it was.
Because Conrad came on my show, and he just made fun of my accent for around 20 minutes, so we didn't even get
to... I'm not there yet.
So we didn't get to, like, the whole thing. I know it, and I think it's fascinating. You're out of WWF. We'll get to that later on. How does Conrad approach you? Because I know he did a little podcast, Ric Flair, that fizzled out.
Right.
How does... Because I never knew that Bruce Pritchard was Vince McMahon's right-hand man. You were in this circle. How does Conrad even approach you and say, hey, let's do this show where I just ask every question that every hardcore wrestling fan wants to hear?
Well, Conrad and I were doing mortgages. Conrad owns a mortgage company. And if you need help with your mortgage, go to savewithbruce.com. It is it was a way to sell mortgages. It was a way to get that word out there and have First Family Mortgage as our sponsor. Say, if nothing else, we get First Family Mortgage out there and we maybe sell a few mortgages. Started talking, and being different, we just started picking topics. We would examine one topic per show and then do a deep dive. And Conrad and the research, man, they take it as deep as it gets sometimes. And a lot of times it's done to piss me off and, you know, because the research that is used is usually 99% incorrect and correctly reported by people that don't have any clue what the hell was really going on.
Like Meltzer, your boy.
God.
When he started saying, hey, because everybody you meet, like your buddy Tim Sabian, first of all, where'd Tim take you to dinner the other night? Because he was texting me the whole night. I love you, Mike. I love you. Where'd he take you to dinner?
Da Umberto. Da Umberto. Some Italian place.
Any good?
That's all right.
He loves you.
That's all right. Well, what's not to love?
No, he wants you to join the Westwood One team. You know how bad he wants you, right?
Well, you know, want in one hand and you know what to do in the other. We're happy where we are right now, but you never know what the future holds.
Tim's going to love hearing that. You know that, right?
Yeah, well.
When I told him you were coming on, he's in Minneapolis, Minnesota with his mom right now.
Right.
But he's like, Bruce is coming in. All right, tell him I said hi. Listen, if he wants breakfast, whatever Bruce wants, you get him. I said, all right, Tim, whatever he wants. Conrad does such a good job with the research and going at you, because sometimes you seem evasive with some of the questions. You said you have a research team. In the beginning, was it just Conrad watching something and writing down a litany of stuff to talk to you about?
A lot of it was going back, and he would use the Wrestling Observer, I guess, website and cut and paste a lot of different things from there to ask me. And as I say, a lot of it was to ask, was this true? Did this really happen? What's the story here? And I would say, what? A lot of times, some of it, the first time I'm ever hearing that version of the story, thinking, who made this up? And then you try to retrace and think, well, it's coming from this point of view. This is the only place it could have come from. So it was a little bit different.
Do you enjoy it looking back now? Because I know in the time you definitely didn't appreciate it. And I always say, I'm a Yankee guy. And Gita said his only regret in New York was from 96 all the way through. He didn't enjoy the ride. And you probably didn't enjoy the ride while you were in the WWF, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay, did you?
Yeah, I did. Because I was a kid from Texas that wanted to be in wrestling since I was 4 years old. I was working in it when I was 10 years old to see the business and be a part of the evolution of the business all those years. That was kicking the ass. And to be such a big part of it and look at it go from this little tiny office to television studio, a tower, and hot and cold running everything, that is bizarre to me. And I loved the ride. Had good times and bad times. But the ride itself and the run was a lot of fun.
You say it on the show a lot, and I was just listening to the Hogan one, the recent Hulk Hogan episode that you and Conrad did. You got in at 24. How'd you get in at 24? And not just, you weren't like an intern at 24. You were helping storylines at 24. I actually don't even know how that happened.
I'd been working in Texas, and I'd been working with Bill Watts and the Mid-South Universal Wrestling Federation. The time I ran the Houston Wrestling Office, and out of that I also did on-air interviews and would give my input from time to time. But I was just that guy that kind of did everything, especially in Houston. And Eddie Gilbert was a wrestler who was a really good friend of mine. I was frustrated because I had reached that point thinking, I'm 24 years old, I'm in Houston, what the hell am I going to do beyond this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's next? And there wasn't a whole lot next. He asked me, said, I'm going to New York. I'm going to meet with Vince. Are you interested in going to New York? I said, yeah, man, give my number. Talk to me. Eddie put me over like $1 million. Vince says, have him call me. I called every day for 2 weeks.
No cell phone. So you're calling like the office line. Yeah.
And every day he's like, hold on. Vince is busy right now. He says, call back tomorrow at such and such a time. I would call back on the dot. Finally, after a while, he picks up the phone. You're persistent. I like that. And we talked. He had no idea. I mean, he had an idea of who I was and what I did, but he had no idea how to use me. He says, come on up, see what we do. Sends me a plane ticket. I flew up to Worcester. We interviewed and talked and hung around each other. Hired me. No job title, no nothing. It was go and sit in the different departments for a week at a time, find out where you're comfortable and see where you can help us, and we'll take it from there. So it was sight unseen. I didn't know anybody except for Joel Watts, who came with me.
And now you're probably a little nervous. Like, you're in these offices, in these, like, what am I doing here? Are they going to can me? Is that was your every day getting fired?
No, it wasn't that. It was I was in a completely different world that I'd never been in, very unfamiliar with. And to me, my life depended on it because I'm sitting there going, I have no friends up here. I'm living in this little apartment in Stamford, Connecticut. And what next? What happens next? So I was able to land in television, and I loved producing and writing TV. See, I never realized that the things that I did had titles to them.
Okay.
So, for instance, you're a producer. I said, no, I just put together the TV. I just, like, write it out and arrange it and then put it together. That's a producer. No. Paul's a producer. I just, you know, make it and get it on the air. That's a producer. Okay, hey, sounds good to me. And so I did that for a long time, and that's what where I really my passion and my love came from, to stay there and do that.
And now you were involved in all these storylines and stuff too.
I was fortunate enough in that Vince, traveled with Vince and Pat a lot when we would do TV and do different things, so when it was time to talk creative, everybody was involved, and I wasn't shy about shooting out ideas all the time.
How old at this point is, because it's you, Vince. Vince is obviously older. Pat is older.
Right.
So you're like a young kid.
Yes.
You have to be cocky. I think you don't play well with others, so now you're a cocky 25, 26-year-old kid now.
Yeah.
Just say no. Hulk Hogan's going to do this. The Hart Foundation's going to do this. So you... Did the other wrestlers kind of resent you, or were they?
Well, here's the thing. So a lot of them, I remember Dusty Rhodes in particular. Dusty had known me since I was 10 years old. I was all the kid. What's up, kid? How you doing, baby? Yeah, the good kid. And now this kid is telling me what to do. You know, Pumpkin Hen, remember when you were in Houston, you take my mama to a thief. You know, that's what. And I was main eventing. Okay, now you want to tell Dream what to do. That was weird for some people. But then again, then there were the guys that didn't know me that I had to make that first impression on. They thought I was much older. They thought that I had all this experience. And I remember telling Vince, man, I was doing all this. I was running that studio 24 years old. I seriously can't imagine it.
No, and
now.
How was it working for Vince? Because he's historically known to be, he has to win. Everything he does is winning. Was it just fucking nuts working with Vince? I think I heard on Jericho, you said, I listened to you on Jericho, and you said something like, Vince would just call you at 3 a.m., and it would just be the norm. Like, it wouldn't be anything like, hey, and he would call you house line at 3 a.m.
Yes. What are you doing, pal? Sleep's the enemy. You'll sleep when you're dead. It's funny, Vince and I just had this conversation. you did it. You had to always be ready to go. And no matter what, you had to be ready. I kept a notepad by my bed, always ready to write something down and get something done. Did not matter what time of day it was.
I love the irony of the whole thing. You did the podcast, and I thought, you know, after I heard a few episodes of your podcast, I did more research on you. I'm like, oh, Bruce telling these, not that you're telling secrets, but you giving the behind-the-scenes stuff is your final nail in the coffin. And yet Vince, only Vince McMahon would love this idea of like, and he brings you back. Is it crazy that you're back in the WWE now?
Yes.
Like, when I heard a few of the podcasts, and you're hard on a few wrestlers, and I'm pretty sure they deserve it because you're very fair with everyone from what I hear. And I'm like, dude, this is the only dude who's really talking. And it's not like just a wrestler who is, you know, has a grudge. You were his right-hand man. You were there for all these storylines. I'm like, this is final nail in the coffin. Sorry, Bruce. And he brings you back.
Well, when we started to do it, I think that when it really started to pick up steam is when I said, I don't care. I'm never going back. The cards fall where they may. But there was, for me, there wasn't that I had a great run. I had a wonderful time there. We did some crazy stuff, but I had nothing to bitch about. They were really good to me. Mm-hmm. And I had a blast doing what I did there. Not going to go bash it just because I'm not there anymore. So that was that part of it. I never understood why people always wanted to bash the place that you spent so long. And Pat Patterson and I, in later years, when it was just the two of us and created with Vince, the point of view is mine, and there's only two people that can dispute it, and that's Vince and Pat.
And Vince is never talking.
And Vince ain't talking. You know, Pat doesn't remember, so I'm good.
So whatever you say is golden.
Yeah. Yeah, dispute it. Yeah. Want another hot dog? Okay. Well, squirrel.
Any wrestlers pissed off? Any wrestlers reach out to you like, dude, that's fucked up. Why'd you say that on the show?
A couple. Yeah, a couple. But it's always, most of it is when people get things out of context. Somebody will tell, oh, they said this about you.
Yeah, here's the one line. Meanwhile, you spoke 20 minutes on it, but they pull that one line.
Right. And so I always encourage them. Did you listen to the show? No, I heard this line. Okay. Listen to the show. And then if you're still upset, we'll talk about it after. But I can't defend it when all you've heard is one line. You need to hear how we got into it. You need to hear how we got out of it. And then take it from there, because the knee-jerk reaction, I'm going to kill him. Yeah. Like, okay, here I am. But that's not what I said, nor is that what I meant. And if you listen to the whole thing, you'll see a little bit different. And once I do that, it's fine.
It's crazy. So I've been doing the show now, just say, for 2.5-3 years. And I've had on, like, Dick Vitale, like, huge, huge guests. And I, for some reason, maybe because it brings you back to childhood, I fanboy out with the wrestlers. Like, Jake the Snakes came on, Kamala, Abdullah, B. Brian Blair, like, all these old wrestlers who come on. Mm-hmm. Double J, all these. And I'm like, it just brings you back to that nostalgic time of wrestling buddies and the wrestling figures. And now you're 24 years old, up to, you know, doing this. Living the dream. That's a dream job.
Right.
In the wrestling world with these iconic figures to us, looking at wrestling now when every guy's jacked, everything's, you know, it's a different whole. Do you miss the old Hillbilly Jim, Kamala, the model? Do you miss those old silly gimmicks that worked?
There's a point that I do. I do miss the over-the-top characters. I loved the over-the-top characters. It was something that we did, and I think we did it well. Might have overdone some of them sometimes. But that, to me, was the fun part of the business, being able to create something so outlandish and larger than life that those are the characters that people to this day still remember. They still bring up and come back and are like telling you, oh, man, I remember this. And you go, yeah, of course you do. You know why? Because that's good shit, and you remember it.
And it worked.
It does work. When, you know, the kind of go, your occupational gimmicks. It wasn't occupational gimmicks. It was an extension of their personality and what made them tick sometimes.
Take me to the room. You're in a room. You have Kamala. Before, I don't think he came in. Did he come to the WWE or WWF as Kamala?
Yes.
Okay, he did?
Yeah.
How does it come like, hey, you guys are sitting around the room. Here's a wrestler. Here's a pitcher. Let's make him X. How does that process work? I've always wanted to know this.
Most of the time, it starts with an interview. It starts with, tell me a little bit about yourself. What do you do? What are your hobbies? Did you go to school? Did you have any unusual jobs or talents? And growing up, what's your favorite thing to do? What do you? And when they start talking, for example, the Big Boss Man started really, as he's going through his life, he got very animated and very passionate about his time as a prison guard in Cobb County, Georgia. And it's like, oh my God, what better character than a heel prison guard? Because everybody hates authority.
Of course.
Hate authority figures. And here's this big, rough, tough guy, and he's a prison guard, and he's a heel, and he beats crap out of you. And it was...
With the nightstick.
Yes. So it was a way to get his personality out, tap into something he had already done and seen. So he knew it from the prison guard standpoint. It wasn't a gimmick as much as it was turning the volume up on him. Some of those don't work. You know, Duke the Dumpster Drossy, he was a garbage man at one point in his career. We thought, okay, we never had a garbage man. That'll be cool. And they get on board. They like it. But then it just shits the bed.
It just fizzles out.
Yeah. But Paul Bearer, he was a mortician.
Was he?
He was a licensed mortician. Because he didn't. His thing was, he goes, you never know how long the wrestling business is going to go. So I've got to have something be prepared for life after wrestling. He kept his mortician's license alive, and that was what he did. That was his trade. That's what he did for a living. So when they heard mortician, we had Undertaker, I was getting
out.
That was
it. Yeah.
It was like, here's the guy.
I know I'm jumping back and forth because this is just fucking awesome having you on. You're a behind-the-scenes guy, helping out with these storylines. Now your brother Love on TV. Resentment from a lot of people?
I don't know if there was resentment. Confusion.
Like, why is the producer on the show now with a red face being a preacher? Was that a... Like, were the guys pissed off about that? Like, why are you getting airtime, not us?
I think... I don't know if pissed off is the right word, but yeah, confusion of like, and guys didn't really care about airtime as much in those days because there was so much of it for everybody. You had 3-5 syndicated shows, so you're everywhere. If anything, it was like, God, can I only have to work once this week?
Okay.
But it was, I think that when it got over, no one knew if it would get over, but I do thank God for Jessica Hahn and Jim Baker and timing-wise because the scandal of Jim Baker, the evangelist, getting caught sleeping with his secretary happened 3 weeks prior to – or no, a post my first deal. So I'm on the air 3 weeks into it. The scandal breaks. I'm made. Because now people are going, they're copying Jim Baker. I was actually first.
and you weren't sleeping with your secretary?
No. Well,
yeah. Give me the best storyline that you proposed and worked and one that you wanted and then turned down.
I would have to say the best is Undertaker Kane and the whole introduction of Kane, the whole story of Kane, I think, more than anything. And the one that got away was the culmination and the finish and the ending of Vince and Mr. America, Hulk Hogan.
What'd you want?
I wanted to shave Vince's head.
Really?
Yeah.
And he was not having any of that?
No, he was for it. It just, that, during that time, that's when Hulk and he had a disagreement about money and everything else. And Vince didn't understand the whole storyline, per se. They know it's Hulk.
I said, I know they know it's Hulk. That's the gimmick.
You have to prove it. That's your frustration. You know it's Hulk. Everybody knows it's Hulk. When it comes time to ask and prove it's Hulk, you can't prove it's Hulk. And
that's stupid.
I love your impressions. Your impressions during the show, it's rewind, re-listen to it. You do Macho Man good.
That's right. Yeah. Macho Man, yeah.
First name Macho, last name Man. Yeah. Look at the boot. Read left to right, right to left. Either one, it makes sense.
Yeah.
No, I know we're jumping around. Are you having fun doing the podcast? Like,
yeah.
Like, it's a blast, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
You just sit there. Now, do you guys, where are you living?
I live outside of Houston.
And
little town, Friendswood.
Conrad's
and Conrad lives in the hills of Alabama.
Because he has to say Roll Tide. We get it. Now, was it humbling for you out of WWF going to sell mortgage? Not that it's a bad job. Was it kind of humbling that you went from the guy that everyone knew? Now, growing up, I thought you guys were loaded. You're on TV. You're a wrestler. And it's funny, when you talk to, like, Brian Blair or you talk to Kamala, they have nothing. Like, Jake the Snake, I had to pick him up down the shore. He had, Like, he needed a ride. And I'm like, no, you're on TV. You have wrestling figures. You're rich. So did it ever humble you a little bit? Did it put you back like, oh, it sucks. I was in wrestling. Now I'm out of it. Like, I need a real job.
That's reality, though. I think everybody needs a real job at some point. You have to have something that you can fall back on and something that you can do. But we all think it's going to last forever. We think that, man, we're doing this and we're going to be doing this until the end of time. And you can't touch us. And then reality sets in and you realize, oh, God, I got to go do something.
Nervous that you guys don't have enough topics for the podcast, or it's not even possible?
No, it's not at all. Well, I've got 45 years in the business, so it's
I'm telling you, it blew my mind listening to those shows, and it's intimidating. I'm a big podcast guy. I listen to the radio. If I see a podcast like an hour and 50 minutes, I'm like, dude, forget it. But for some reason, something to wrestle with, if it could say 3 hours, good, that means I'm getting everything. And I love the watch-alongs. Explain to everybody what the watch-along podcasts are, because it's great.
The watch-alongs is when we take a specific event or match or something, and we'll go to the WWE Network and say, okay, folks, here's where we're at. You know, 202, get ready to hit play. We're going to count you down. And then we watch together, and we do side commentary on it as to either what was really going on or, you know, so-and-so said this. What's the real story? Watch this. This is, you know, pretty cool coming up. It depends, but it's a lot of fun, and those are easy.
And they're great. And that has to be a reason Vince brought you back, too. You're promoting them. You promoted, hey, get the app.
Yeah.
Let's watch these shows together.
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of bad blood, and now you're back, and everyone's like, why the fuck is Bruce back? Or are those guys kind of all gone already?
I think that time heals all wounds, and it's been a lot of time. I screwed up, and I realize I screwed up.
But what did you do that was so wrong? You just said you were difficult to work with.
I was. I didn't play well with others.
I love when you say that.
I mean, it was – there were a lot of perceptions and things like that. It was – for example, I told a story that airs today on our show about Sunday Night Heat, and I would always – there always had to be a writer at Sunday Night Heat when we did it at the World in Manhattan. Well, I would always try and position it to where when Sunday Night was Heat, Sunday Night Heat was live on the road. Well, that would be my week because I would already be on the road.
Okay.
And I didn't have to go into New York and I didn't have to go to the restaurant. So I would, being senior writer, I could do that. I was like, oh, he's always there. He doesn't do shit, man. He's like, goes to TV when we're all there. He never has to go to the restaurant. Like, you're right. You be around here as many years as I have, okay? Then you'll get perks. And I figured out, because again, being there a while and you accumulate vacation time, I would use my vacation time wisely, where I would take a Monday and a Tuesday, and then Wednesday I would be back at work, but Wednesday was a travel day for everybody else.
So you listen, that's strategically doing it. So you give yourself a 3-day swing. Yes. Right there. Yeah.
Yeah. And people were like, well, that's not fair because nobody's working on Wednesday. We're traveling. I said, but I was available.
Wait, you were. If the WWE, WWF needed you, Bruce Pritchard would have been there.
Yes, you're damn right.
So, but that's like comes with time on the job. So
yeah, and so I worked it to, especially around the holidays at the end of the year, I got the speech earlier on. You have to use your vacation time. So use it all. We're not going to credit you. You need your vacation time. I'm like, okay. You know, yes, ma'am. I'll do it. So I scheduled it. It was approved.
Okay.
And then I do it, and it's like, well, Bruce is taking off around the holidays. How come Bruce isn't having to be here for the Christmas show or the Thanksgiving show or the New Year show? Because I was told to get my vacation in, and I'm a good company guy. And sometimes I would get it where it was 2 weeks in a row. And then I would take that Wednesday. I would say, okay, I'm taking Monday, Tuesday, but I'll come in and work on Wednesday. West Coast shoot. These guys are in a plane for 9 hours, but I'm available. I'm good, guys. Anybody want work? I'm good. I'm here. Bounce something off of me. So that was the rap, because I think I was just smarter than everybody else and being able to I got away with it because I was a senior guy.
But Vince wasn't pissing you for that, was he?
Vince figured it is funny. Vince figured it out in 2008 and says, "Hey, pal, this vacation thing and multiples and, you know, we need you there during this time." I said, "Sorry, I was told to take my vacation."
"Sorry, I held it till December. That's my bad, Vince."
You know, yeah, I was, you know, I got to get this done. "Or you can pay me. Now take your vacation. Just take it some other time." Okay.
So, I love the story. I think you told it on Opie's show. The how'd you get fired the first time from Vince?
Oh man, there was an old story of Ernie Ladd, big 7-foot wrestler, played football, Grambling, played for the Giants and the Oilers and a lot of different people. Ernie Ladd is telling Bill Watts about why Vince McMahon is a genius, and he says, "Look at Nikolai Volkov, look at Iron Sheik. They're the real thing. That's why Vince is a genius. He promotes the real thing. They're real. You can't see through them. The man is a genius. Vince McMahon is a genius. He fired my ass. He's a genius." And I'm laughing my ass off. I said, "Vince McMahon is a genius. He fired your ass." So I would always do that for Vince. "The man is a genius. He fired my ass." I walk into a room. I'm wearing pink shorts, flip-flops, and, you know, a big old bodybuilder shirt to hide all my fat. And Vince looks at me and says, "Brucey, the immortal words of Ernie Ladd." I go, "The man is a genius. My ass is fired. Thank you for everything, pal." That was it.
And what was the reason for the firing? I love that you fired yourself, by the way. That's just fucking awesome.
He had hired a guy to be an executive producer. Every time that things would kind of go astray, it was due to somebody else being in between Vince and I, and I didn't know how to handle it. I was young, immature, and like I said, didn't play well with others. So when other people would come in, I instead of working with them, I could have worked with them and made it work. That would have been easy.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, sometimes I would choose to be difficult. "Oh, this isn't the way you do it. You do it my way." That didn't work. I lost that one. So, you know, go away and grow up a little bit and come back and screw up again.
So, and get fired again.
You get fired again, yeah. So it all works.
By Stephanie.
Then, yeah.
But and then, yeah. All Shane has to do is fire you, and then you got the trifecta.
Yeah. Exactly. Linda can come back and fire me and just...
I'm going to keep you for a few more minutes. I'll tell you one thing that I never realized until listening to your show. The first, I've been to a bunch of wrestling, and I remember my dad took me to WrestleMania 4 in Atlantic City. And up until recently, I'm like, that was the greatest wrestling event of all time. There was a tournament. There was this. You goddamn son of a bitches broke it down. I'm like, it wasn't good. And up until recently, you know, when you guys sit around, you have a few drinks, and wrestling just always comes up. Yep. A nostalgic wrestling talk with, my favorite was Rick Rude. I was this guy. And WrestleMania 4, like the greatest wrestling thing ever. And then I watched, I'm like, oh, maybe because I'm older, it wasn't that good. And then I hear you and Conrad break it down. I'm like, okay, it sucked. But the tournament aspect was great. I'm like, that really sucked.
Yeah, it did. It did. Doesn't hold up well over time.
It doesn't. And some of them do.
Yeah. Some do. That one didn't.
Do you know during the events you're watching, you're like, oh, this isn't that great? Or...
For me, I was so high on being at my first WrestleMania that I thought everything about it was great because it was so grandiose, and that was a historic moment for me.
That was the first one you were at?
That was the first one.
Oh, I actually didn't know that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that was a good – because I thought 5 was good. The Mega Powers explode. Yeah. 6, Hogan Warrior, which you guys just talked about on Something to Wrestle. It went like really, really high after that.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you talked about – you wanted to turn Hogan heel. You thought it would have been something different. What, obviously, NWO wasn't in your mind. What aspect of heelness did you want? Not to be red in the red, yellow anymore. What Hogan heel aspect did you want?
I just wanted Hulk to turn on the audience because the audience had already turned on him a little bit. There was a faction in the audience, and it was kind of a groundswell of people that were turning on Hogan. They were tired of the red and yellow. They were tired of the red, white, and blue, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, and do what's right. Be me, brother. What you gonna do? Just change. Don't change. He didn't have to change anything he did in the ring. He just had to tweak that personality a little bit and let them know, hey, you turned your back on me. Because they were. They were starting to do that.
It was the fans growing up, because I never changed on him. Mm-hmm. But all my buddies were like a year or two older than me, like, dude, this shit's corny.
Yeah.
Why am I going to say my prayers, eat my vitamins? That's corny shit. I don't want to go in the bathroom and press the Hulk Hogan toothbrush.
Yeah.
Like, so people were getting tired, and it was like the 18 to 20, 30, like, dude, this shit's corny now.
Yes.
The kids loved it. The parents loved it. So what would you just be more of a bad guy, like, screw you guys?
Yeah, just more of an attitude and more of a real character and somebody. And I think that in time you didn't even have to change that character to bring him back. All you had to do was change his opponent. And all of a sudden they've got their old Hulk back because he's beating up a worse guy. So just the guy, the people that are over the most in whatever role they're in, whether it's a heel or a babyface, when they turn, they will be just as hot based on their popularity of where they were before.
Any memorabilia you keep throughout the days from the beginning of it?
I get to ask that all the time. No, not really.
Nothing really.
No, I have Maurice Tillet's death mask in my office. I've got Paul Bosch's 50th anniversary trophy, which is a big 7-foot trophy. Other than that, not really.
Looking back now, would you have taken anything? Or you were a part of it, right? So
yeah, that's the thing. I never thought of it in the moment. You don't think of those things. And Lawrence Taylor gave me his boots after that, and I actually gave those to Conrad because I was thinking, what do I want with these? I don't care.
Yeah,
I didn't even get him to sign them or anything. But it was Lawrence was like, hey man. Just wanted to give you these.
Why?
Why did he want to give them to me?
Yeah.
Just because I was one of those guys, along with Pat Patterson, for like every workout, and I helped LT a lot. I helped him a lot with his promos and just getting through everything, and kind of walked him and held his hand through that entire promotion. LT was great.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
I love when you guys brought in like the special guests and stuff, the Tysons and him. Yeah. That was awesome. I love that stuff.
Exactly.
Before we wrap up, I know you told on Opie. Can you just tell the Donald Trump story with Vince in the limo?
Vince in the limo. You have to.
Didn't he actually call up to see if Vince was okay?
Oh God. Well, after Vince gets in the limousine explodes, and Donald called the office to make sure Vince was okay.
To check on his buddy Vince.
Yes. Which I love that. You know, people were concerned. My God.
Of course, everyone was concerned. Vince just died.
Yeah.
My mom. I'll tell you this, Bruce. My mom. I used to watch it, obviously, religiously. And my mom's like, it was my mom. It was me, my dad, and my brother. We'd watch it, and my brother loved The Warrior. I loved Hogan. My mom would be like, are you guys kidding? Look at this. I'm like, Mom, please. He's really hurt.
Right.
The snake just bit Macho's arm.
Yeah.
It's crazy how, I guess because there's no internet, you couldn't like zoom in and be like, oh, it's fake. And there was no conspiracy guys. Everything worked back then.
Of course it did.
I miss those days.
Yeah. And you know, it's fake's a bad word. Because I always like to, when people go, all that crap's fake. No, it's real. Every bit of it is choreographed. Yes, we know who's going to win. I said, but the bumps, everything in it, it hurts. And it's done by the greatest athletes in the world to make it look how it looks sometimes. Some are better than others. And that's where people go, it's fake because he really didn't hit him. If I was to hit a guy that hard, he'd be knocked out. I was like, oh, yeah. But if you were to hit a guy that hard in a real fight, and that guy had an iron jaw, he would just get up, kick your ass, and not sell anything. This is entertainment, folks. We're here to entertain you. This is a movie. This is a television show. These people are playing a part, and they are here to make it larger than life and entertain you and hopefully take you for a ride.
I was so stoked that you came on. I know he's supposed to do Opie's show, and once...
Now he's a big shot, man. Yeah, Opie can't be bothered.
Yeah, he's too much of a diva. I guess the 20 minutes he had you on in Philly, which everyone fucking loved more than life, he can't come down from the beach. But I got to...
I don't even know. I don't even want to tell you how far away I'm staying from here. It was ridiculous. And I had to trek, get up at the crack of dawn this morning so that I could make it here in time because of the extremely outrageous commute. But yet, Opie can't come in from the beach.
And I appreciate you. Yeah, he is laying at the beach. I appreciate you making that long commute. That does suck. And when you walked in here and said, I need a car, I'm like, Fuck, we should have sent him a car.
Yes.
I feel bad we didn't send you a car. It makes a U-turn on the block.
Right.
Probably would have got pulled over. Would have made your commute 2 minutes longer.
Oh, I would have been hot.
Hey, one question about like storylines. People now these days, me included, we need instant gratification. We need hit enter. We don't want to wait 2 seconds for a show to load up on Netflix or anything. The 7, 8, 9 month storylines that you would just build up and build up. Would it work now?
I think it still would. I definitely think it would. Maybe not 8 months like we used to or things like that. But yes, I do. I believe that if people were truly invested in a long-term story, that you would get after the, let's call it, six-week mark, I think people would start, I got to pay attention. This guy's on the screen or this girl's on the screen. I got to pay attention now because I know there's going to be another piece of this puzzle. I know it's going to be paid off somewhere. Maybe they're going to take it to WrestleMania. No, they're going to blow it off at Royal Rumble. Oh, there's a swerve. There's something else. I think it would work. I just think that a lot of times it's that instant gratification. It's started in the first hour, finish it in the third.
Remember, some of those storylines would go on for months and months.
Yeah.
And the Ultimate Warrior in the snake pit, these month-long things. And finally, the culmination, boom, it's WrestleMania. And oh, that's what happens, the final piece. And you didn't know what was going to happen. Like, I missed that.
Yes, because you got invested in the storyline. You wanted to see the outcome.
Fully invested.
Yes.
I access to every person on my show. You and I are out at a bar. You want to impress everyone in the bar. Who's the coolest dude in your phone that if you texted them, they would text you back within an hour?
Probably Vince.
That's one of the hardest ones to ever beat. Okay, you win. And just tell everybody about StarCast.
I did it to Kenny Banya the other day. And
oh, Banya was just here last week.
Okay, well, we did the exact same thing. And it was his was Jerry Seinfeld. Okay, so he pulls out Jerry Seinfeld. I go, oh yeah, I got Vince. Let's see who answers us back first.
And who won?
Oh, he wouldn't do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. When did you do that with him? Because he was on my show.
Yeah, podcast
down in Philly.
Yes.
It's funny. So I met him in Philly. I met you and him in Philly. And I'm like, dude, if you're ever in New York, he's like, I'll be there next week. I'm throwing out the first pitch at the Brooklyn Cyclones game. Kenny Banya bobblehead, and I'm a Seinfeld fanatic. He came up here, did like an hour with me. He's doing a podcast. That's gold. He's great, and you fanboyed out with him too, didn't you?
Oh yeah, big time. We had a blast.
He's a big sports guy too.
Yeah, he's absolutely wonderful. So it's we had a good time, but we did the thing. We were up. Okay, you got that one. What's number two? Yeah,
that's really cool. There,
and went through the whole thing. I go, Hulk Hogan. I don't think I'd beat that.
you can't beat Hulk and Vince. You can't beat Hulk and Vince.
Yeah, so it's craziness.
And just tell everybody about StarCast in Chicago.
Hey, man, StarCast in Chicago is going to be the bomb because it's right before All In, and they're going to have every independent star that you can possibly think of. Cody and the Young Bucks have put together a great show. I'm not going to be at All In, but I'm going to be at StarCast. They're going to roast me. Which is bullshit. First, I thought I was going to get some roast. Somebody's going to cook big pot roast. I'm like, woohoo, all right, y'all can come on out and get some roast. I find out these people are going to make fun of me. I don't think that's fair.
That's so mean-spirited.
It is. It's just mean-spirited. But we have very unique meet and greets and just different experiences that are going to be one of a kind, and the only way to experience is by being there. And it is going to be a blast because I just love seeing all the guys in one place and a bunch of old timers, like a bunch of old farts just sitting around and lying to each other with their stories.
It's the most interactive, I guess, convention I've ever seen. Because it's not like, hey, here's a quick picture. What's your name? Go ahead, but have a good day.
Yeah.
Dude, you're hanging out with these people and everything. It seems like it's going to be really, really special.
I think it will be. I think it's going to be great, and I think it's going to be something people are going to talk about for a long time because it will be the first time that they can actually participate in a lot of these fan interactions. So it's going to be great.
Can Conrad finally sleep after this? The man hasn't slept in months.
Sleep's the enemy.
All right, Vince.
Yeah.
Bruce, when I mean this, it's a pleasure for me. I'm going to ask you one question.
I don't, you said one question I know. The last 18
you know
questions.
What's great?
I want somebody to roll this back I know, you and know count how many. Okay, Bruce, this is it.
Because I feel bad I have you on so long.
One more question.
Because I forget even the mic's around. But I so I, like I said, I have no memorabilia in my house. I have two seats from Yankee Stadium. That's my memorabilia. I have like a lot of Kentucky basketball stuff, which I don't want people to give to me. I'm a huge Kentucky fan. But I had Kenny Bonilla sign his bobblehead for me.
Nice.
Which was great. So I have a... In my parents' garage on the shore, I have every wrestling figure ever in packages. I'm going to send you the Brother Love one. Would you sign it for me?
That's $30. No. What? Thank you. No, $30. For you, $35.
And I'll pay for shipping.
Yeah. Oh, please. Comes to my house without a return thing. And first of all, folks, don't send things to my house. You'll never get them back.
Bruce Pritchard, thank you so much, my friend. You son of a bitch.